Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Are you tired? Do you suffer from chronic pain, depression, or anxiety? Do you have allergies or autoimmune issues? How's your sex drive? If you have one or more of these symptoms, according to my guest today, you may be suffering from what she calls chronic body depletion, a condition related to weight gain, high blood pressure, and many other symptoms that leave the body drained. Chronic body depletion is prevalent among women who prioritize the needs of others before themselves, what we call the caregiver role. Dr. Rachel Carlton Abrams is a board-certified family doctor in Santa Cruz, California. She's also certified in integrative and holistic medicine. 77% of her patients suffer with at least two symptoms of chronic body depletion, and she set up her current practice to address it by providing long appointments and having other types of practitioners in the office with her, such as a psychologist, naturopathic physician, and chiropractor. Abrams herself experienced symptoms of chronic body depletion in her first medical practice. It made her feel like a hamster on a wheel. Her metamorphosis led her on a journey which resulted in the writing of a new book, Bodywise, Discovering Your Body's Intelligence for Lifelong Health and Healing. Dr. Rachel Carlton Abrams is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. Rachel Carlton Abrams, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by describing what you mean by the phrase body intelligence, or what you refer to as BQ, kind of like IQ. What is that, and how do we measure it?
Well, thank you so much for asking. And you know, most of us know what IQ is, or our intellectual intelligence, and some people are even aware of EQ, or emotional intelligence, and how important that is for well-being. And I'm talking about BQ, which is body intelligence. And I'm trying to help people understand and even remember that their body actually talks to them, and that the body has very important information for us. And body intelligence is something that we would not have survived without as a human species, as a human animal. When we look at how our ancestors, even just, you know, hundreds of years ago, survived, they had to actually have deep connection to the earth and to their intuition to find food, even hunt for food, grow food, avoid predators, to really survive. And because in our modern culture, so much of that is unnecessary to our survival, people kind of ignore their bodies. And also because our culture is one that rewards you for ignoring your body. Being a physician, you completely understand that from medical training. But in being productive, not sleeping if you don't have to, drinking more caffeine, getting more done, seems to be what's rewarded. And unfortunately, that is ignoring the signals of our bodies. And it creates depletion and illness.
It does seem as though we are trained, in a sense, to ignore that intuition. But you make the point that it was our intuition as a species and being in touch with our bodies that let us survive for these millennia, really, as a species. So why in the modern age are we so afflicted? And you write very well about this, about particularly your female patients, where you tend to see this preponderance of another phrase that was new to me that you came up with in the book, chronic body depletion. What do you mean by chronic body depletion, and why is it so rampant?
Such a good question, and I really called it chronic body depletion because I feel like, to some degree, almost all of my patients, and I actually did a survey in my office, and I can tell you, 75% of the people coming into my office, and that's men and women, by the way, have this collection of symptoms I call chronic body depletion, and that would include fatigue, anxiety, and depression, chronic pain of some sort, neck pain, back pain, painful periods, migraines, low libido, and allergy and autoimmune disease. And these are all issues that have been increasing in frequency, and I really believe are because of the mismatch between the physiology of our bodies, which was adapted to live thousands of years ago when our lives looked a lot different, and we're living in a culture where we don't sleep enough, we're not very active, we are bombarded with information. You know, when you look at, you know, what we know about humans, our physiology developed to know about 150 people and to live with those 150 people and occasionally see other people. So getting worldwide news or a Twitter feed on a regular basis is a little bit overwhelming for our minds. Not that we can't do it, not that we can't adapt, but we have to listen deeply to our bodies about what seems to be working for us. And a lot of those things, not enough sleep, too much stress, emphasis on productivity, being socially isolated, having too much stimulation, all actually create illness in people. And as I know you know, 90% of the issues that people walk into the doctor's office with are caused by what we call lifestyle, those choices around food, sleep, movement, relationship.
Yeah, definitely. And and I guess part three of your book is where you really focus and give some how-tos, instructions on those facets, you know, how to really optimize your eating, sleeping, moving, et cetera. Body intelligence, BQ. So what are your recommendations? And you outline these in terms of just being more in touch with your body or trusting your body's intuition.
So being body intelligent at its most basic level means just listening to the messages your body's giving you. So let's say you're at work and you've been sitting, you know, in your chair, at your computer, at your desk for 3-4 hours, and by the way, you're paying no attention to the fact that your neck is stiff and your back hurts and maybe your hands are a little stiff or tingly. You know, you're not paying attention to how your position at that desk is affecting your body. And if you do, like every, you know, 60 to 90 minutes, you kind of do a little check-in, get up and stretch, move your shoulders, you know, rotate your wrists, or find a different position, or work standing up, or take a little walk, it can actually make a huge difference in terms of your body's ability to handle your life without pain. So simple things like that, or knowing when you're actually hungry, having a sense of why you feel uncomfortable on the inside. And, you know, I talk also in this book about 4 different levels at which we can have body intelligence. The first one being measure. So that is gathering data, simple things like your blood pressure, your weight, your cholesterol level. And then the second level being sense. So that would be sensing, you know, how your body feels. The third level is feel. And that's because many things that we feel on the inside, including discomfort, don't necessarily have a physical cause. They can have emotional causes, and those are important to know about and to pay attention to, both so we don't over-medicate and also so we don't, for example, overeat. So a lot of people eat because they feel anxious, because they're bored, because they're sad, and eating, of course, doesn't actually help with any of those feelings. Temporarily abates it, but doesn't actually heal it. So when you're in touch with your body, you can actually make a different choice. Oh, I want to feel like I want to eat. When I check in with myself, I notice that I'm anxious. What I'm going to do instead is call my friend, go for a walk, do something different, make myself a cup of tea instead of digging into the chips. And then the fourth level is discernment. And that's putting together all that information, the data, the sensations, any emotional correlations I have, and telling the story of why I feel the way I do. Figuring it out, which is really, you know, a physician's job or any practitioner's job when they see a patient. And I'm trying to empower patients in BodyWise to be able to care for themselves and also to be able to tell that story in a way that allows their provider to take better care of them.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Rachel Carlton Abrams, who's the author of the new book BodyWise, Discovering Your Body's Intelligence for Lifelong Health and Healing. And we have already defined what you mean by body intelligence. We've talked a little bit about chronic body depletion. I want to turn back to that concept for a second of discernment, which was also sort of new to me. So that's something you're encouraging your readers to do and your patients, but you say might require the assistance of a professional to help interpret or analyze certain feelings or sensations that you may have to retrain, in a sense, yourself to feel.
Yes, and, you know, we live in a really interesting time, and I had one yesterday in my office, actually, a female patient come in with complaints of pelvic pain, and her pain has varied depending on her situation, and it's not that there aren't real physical correlates, and I'm very careful about finding those. That's my job as her doctor, but I can tell you that she has a lot more pain when her relationship is suffering, when she is angry at her partner, when she feels betrayed, when she doesn't trust. So discernment is about feeling within yourself, what does this really mean? I have had patients who have rashes that have appeared and disappeared when they're anxious or stressed. Most of us have. We know that psoriasis and eczema are heavily influenced by stress. So having a sense of all the things that might be contributing to me feeling well or unwell is important. Eczema or psoriasis, which are allergy or autoimmune type conditions, are a really good example of that, where the immune system and the activity of the immune system is extremely interrelated with life and emotional experience. And you have to look at all the factors, like is food affecting this? Is work affecting this? Is stress affecting this? To really help someone heal from the inside.
So when you have a patient who comes in with what you would describe as chronic body depletion, and that you're careful to point out that they may not have all of the symptoms that you mentioned earlier, fatigue, low libido, anxiety, depression, chronic pain, but they might have one or two, but they may also vary over time. They may have one or two and then a different one or two. So I can imagine that since it's taken us much of our lives to develop what we might think of as bad habits, we're not going to have one visit with you or necessarily read the book and instantly, you know, solve all our problems, but it's going to be a process. So I guess in real life with your patients, how long does some of this take? And do people come in, you know, every month or something and get guidance from you or from your associates? How does it work?
Well, it really depends on the issue, of course. And you're absolutely right that trying to reverse these things takes persistence and time. I have to say, I have been kind of shocked at how quickly some of these things can move. A good example is a patient of mine who had literally migraine headaches every day of his life since he was 20. Pretty awful. He was 50 when I saw him. And we did a bunch of testing. I talked to him about it. It turned out that he was actually allergic to gluten. After we did appropriate testing, and food allergy testing is something I look at in somebody with headaches, migraines in particular, and we took him off of gluten, and literally his headaches disappeared. So it's not usually that simple, but there are a few things that are simple. Thyroid disease would be another one, and I'm sure you see this too. Low thyroid function affects the body in a very broad and substantial way. Diagnosing it and treating it is a very rapid return to normal feeling and normal behavior. But you have to identify those symptoms, right? Because some of what we're talking about here in chronic body depletion, the fatigue, the pain, the low libido, anxiety, depression, that can all be thyroid, but it can also be menopause, or it can be depression, right? So part of our job is trying to both use lab data, and really explore, you know, when did it start? Why did it start? How can we tell the story of these feelings in a way that can really help this person improve?
One of the things that does pop up a lot, I guess, in the real world, but you spend a good amount of time on in the book is chronic pain. And you talk a little bit about, you know, your own instance where you manifest some stress in your previous medical practice. And we'll get to that in a second about how you used to practice and what led you to where you are now. But what do you mean when you talk about shifting pain as one of the exercises you recommend? I was wondering if you'd share that with us.
Well, anyone who works with people in chronic pain, and that would basically be everyone pretty much, who's an MD, unless they're an anesthesiologist. Or actually, even then, they can specialize in chronic pain. Something like 50% of Americans, 48% of Americans, have some form of chronic pain. So it's a huge issue. And it's related so much to what I was talking about earlier, which is our physiology and our bodies being out of touch with what we're naturally made for. So it has to do with sitting too much. It has to do with being in poor positions. It has to do with being sedentary, not getting enough exercise. It has to do with what we eat, believe it or not. So if you eat an inflammatory diet full of processed food, fast food, you will have more pain, because that food is signaling your body to make more inflammatory mediators, which are what create pain in the first place. And it is also the case that it's very clear that people have a much higher risk of chronic pain if they're depressed, or if they're in a bad relationship, or if they've had trauma. So if we really want to cure chronic pain, we have to think of it in this broad way. How you eat, what your life looks like, how can, you know, we think about your relationships, drawing necessary boundaries. All of those things are important.
One of the aspects of the book that I liked, but I think in reality makes it challenging, is that you don't call it this particularly, but there's a need for really for journaling, for keeping track of what your intake is, what your outputs are, what your exercise might be, or what your goals are. And I think, you know, this brings some science and rigor to it, which is essentially if we're going to make changes, we need to monitor their effects in terms of how we perform, but how we feel most of all, so that if we're going to make changes to address chronic body depletion. And so you have folks recording essentially symptom diaries or food diaries. How did you, I mean, is this just empirically you came to this through your practice and discovered this was the best way to hold people accountable, so to speak, or where you got the most bang for your time with patients?
Great question. I mean, the reason that I have people do protocols and keep track of symptoms is that we're human. And the reason I have a 28-day plan in BodyWise is that I think we all need a kick in the butt sometimes to get started on what we know we need to do. I mean, who in your office doesn't know they need to not eat fast food and sugar and donuts, you know? I mean, we pretty much all know that, but we do it anyway. And so I think sometimes creating a change and then being able to observe how we feel when we make that change and even record it is very supportive for wanting to continue that behavior, because then you can go back and go, wow, interesting. When I was eating more fruits and vegetables and healthy protein, I had fewer headaches, I had less pain, and I was happier. Interesting. Or, you know, when I was doing that exercise regularly, I really felt better. And now that I've fallen off the horse, I can get back on again because I know I'm going to feel better inside myself. Not because the doctor says so, not because I hear it on this radio show, but because in my own body, I know I feel better.
You know, one thing that occurred to me, and you mention it a couple times where you refer to Jon Kabat-Zinn, but it seems like really sensing or quantifying your body intelligence or, you know, your body status really in some ways is very akin or is a mindfulness exercise. That is sort of closing your eyes and really assessing your body parts, you know, systematically to check in with, you know, your senses and your eyes and then your chest or your abdomen and, you know, how you're feeling. Is that safe to say, or would you agree that there's mindfulness embedded in this, and it's just, you know, it's part of the whole package?
It absolutely is. And, you know, I recommend mindfulness meditation for, gosh, just about everything, chronic pain, depression, anxiety, et cetera. But, you know, mindfulness meditation is really about being able to observe how you feel without judgment, right, with acceptance. And I think that is, you know, a huge part of being body-wise, which is, oh, I can observe how I feel and at the same time have compassion for myself, which allows me to then take action to feel better. I think it's fundamental. So the exercises that I teach in BodyWise are all about using a mindfulness approach to listening to your body, to listening to the language that your body is using to try to talk to you about what you might need. And, you know, what's interesting to me about it is that I would say it definitely helps my patients with physical symptoms. But sometimes it really helps them with deciding what job to take or deciding whether or not they should live in this particular place or they should be with this particular person. You know, that when you are accessing your deep body intuition, you actually get information that is helpful in living a more joyful life.
I wonder, too, just back for a second to the journaling, do you meet with a great deal of success with nudging your patients to keep that data when you request it of them, or do you find some folks have a harder time doing that than others?
Well, I don't have people do that all the time. So, you know, I have people do that when we're trying out something specific. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I tend to do it for periods of time because I don't know about you, but it would be really hard for me to keep data like that on an ongoing basis. And one of my principles in my practice is I don't ask anybody else to do something I can't do, right? If I can't do it, it's probably not reasonable to expect other people to. So for me, it's about making an effort for a period of time, you know, 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months, and during that period of time, paying attention so that you really get a sense of the difference it makes. And then you don't need to do it anymore if you're just going to continue on with that behavior, but you know how it affects you.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, so a discrete period of time. I like the sound of that, yes, because it would be hard. preaching to the choir there about doing it long term. I want to segue into a little bit about your personal story, because I think embedded in this very helpful book that has lots of really good approaches to trying to help many of our modern afflictions, your story is quite interesting. And you're a family doctor by training, but you also have integrative and holistic training. So let's start with that. What does that mean exactly to have like additional certification or credential in integrative and holistic? I mean, we hear that a lot, but what does that actually mean in your case?
Well, what it means currently in the United States is actually being solidified, because as of 2017, integrative medicine is a board certified medical specialty, just like cardiology or pulmonology or any other medical specialty. So the good news there is the training is good and it's reliable, and you can actually find a doctor who has done a fellowship in integrative medicine. And what that means is we do a lot more in-depth training on nutrition, which we know is absolutely essential to our health and well-being. We do a lot of in-depth training on other things like exercise or meditation that are supportive of creating health. And then we learn a lot about Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, Western herbal medicine, and functional medicine. Functional medicine being a branch of integrative medicine that looks at cellular physiology and function at a more detailed level.
So you have both of those types of training, but did you come to the integrative and holistic training later? In other words, were you more of a standard de rigueur, you know, family medicine doctor? Tell us about your first practice, or the practice that preceded your current practice, and then how you leapt into that.
So I was trained as a straight-up regular family practice doc and practiced family medicine in a large multi-specialty clinic, like most docs in the United States, for my first 7 years of practice. I happen to always have been holistically inclined, and that's pretty much why I left, because even though I loved my patients and the place I was working was a good place, it was a good clinic, I found that spending 10 or 15 minutes with people made it very difficult for me to actually get at the roots of what was making them sick, what we're talking about today, and that it's very hard and it's much easier to write a prescription. And I think it's a dangerous combination, and I think it's a real challenge for doctors trying to do good care these days. Because as we know, medications have many side effects, some of them potentially toxic. You know, medication is the third leading cause of death in this country. I find that a terrifying statistic. And I love medication when I need it. Don't get me wrong. I prescribe medication. But I try to do it carefully. And I try to do lots of other things first to see if we can get the results we want without writing the prescription. And practicing in that kind of regular practice, I became frustrated. I found that I had to basically shut down my heart all the time to my patients' problems in order to stay on time in my practice, and I started getting migraine headaches. I'd never had them before, and I started getting them 7 years into my practice, and I was working with a friend of mine who is an osteopathic physician who was helping me with the neck pain and the head pain, and she said to me, note the poorness of my own, you know, body wisdom or observational skills, she said, "Hey, have you noticed you only get headaches when you're at work?" So at the time, I was only working 2 or 3 days a week because I had very small children, 3 small children. And I only got headaches at work. I didn't get them when I was at home. I didn't get them on the weekends. So that was my body talking to me. I knew I needed to leave that practice. I was afraid to leave the practice. And it took me a while to get up the courage. And once I quit, my headaches stopped. Amazing. And I see this with my patients, too. And I actually was still working there for another 6 months. No headaches. Because I was moving on. My body was no longer having to, you know, we talk about the body, when it's first talking to you, it knocks, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you don't listen, it kind of gives you a shove. And then if you really don't listen, it sort of knocks you upside the head. Well, I was in the knocks you upside the head part. And as soon as I listened, body stopped talking. I was fine again, and I transitioned to an integrative practice where I'm still almost like a traditional family practice doc. I do in-depth, longer visits with people. I find out about their whole lives. I treat families, kids, grandparents, everybody. And it allows me to do medicine in a way that I get to utilize my skills fully, and I get to really help people heal from within.
And so one of the main points to take home on that is that you're much more in control now because it's your practice as opposed to working for a corporate entity.
Exactly.
And then you, in your practice, share it with or you employ, actually, other providers. So if I'm not mistaken, you have a naturopathic doctor,
physician
mm-hmm. right? You have also, tell us who else is in the practice.
I happily work in a team. And this is the other thing that makes my practice so much more fun and rewarding. Which is that I work with a chiropractor, a naturopathic physician, an acupuncturist, a psychologist, and a homeopath. And we have all been working together for about 8 years, and we treat our patients with group effort. So, for example, if I have a patient who comes in who has had childhood trauma, which is unfortunately not that unusual, they often have issues like chronic pain, fibromyalgia, depression, anxiety, fatigue, and I get to help them work on it from an integrated point of view. I get to send them to the acupuncturist who is going to work with them on nerve pain and some specific things around pain. I get to send them to the trauma psychologist who's going to help them deal with it in that way. And all of us together have a much more potent impact on relieving issues for our clients. And I really can't say enough about having an environment that patients walk into, whether they're seeing one of us or all five of us, where they feel safe and they feel listened to. So, yeah, there are a lot of bells and whistles in integrative medicine and functional medicine, and I do all kinds of interesting genetic testing and advanced nutritional testing. But the number one most important thing I do is that I listen to people and I believe them. It is infinitely sad to me how unusual that is in current medical practice.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about is I noticed in the acknowledgments of the book that your husband is your literary agent, and I just wondered about working so closely with your spouse in terms of producing this book or helping to, I guess, put together perhaps your medical practice. Tell us, what are some of the pitfalls and what are, I guess, some of the strengths of working together so closely with your life partner?
I am fortunate to be. I've been married 25 years this year. We've been together almost 30 years.
Congratulations.
And Doug and I are collaborative in running our family and our household and all of the things we do. We've even written 3 books together. And it's fun and it's a challenge. But I'm someone who really believes that doing love and relationship well has huge benefits, again, for your health, no doubt about it, and for joy. And so, you know, I work hard on my marriage. I don't know any good marriages that don't work hard at it because it requires that. But, wow, the benefits. I mean, the health benefits of having a spouse that you love and care about, it halves the risk of heart disease after the age of 60. It has a huge impact. So, you know, I'm a big advocate for being in, you know, relationships that are nurturing and fulfilling. And in terms of working together, I mean, we both happen to be completely pigheaded. So we don't run our businesses together. That would be really hard. I know people who do. I bow in their general direction. But I have come over the years to just deeply respect my husband's genius around communicating information to people. And I accept his editing happily. And I will say that starting with our first book 20 years ago, that was less the case. and now I'm really, you know, a more mature person. So I actually hugely appreciate his love and support.
Getting toward sort of the end of your book, Body Wise, you know, have moved into the later part where it's body wisdom at this point because you've trained the reader essentially how to become body wise. And you talk about love and how relationships are so important to overall health. You conclude really with talking about finding meaning in life. That's something we all strive to do, I think, to have a purpose. Are there any juicy tidbits you can sort of leave us with?
Well, what I would say about purpose is it really answers the question of why am I here? And I think that that is a fundamental question for each one of us, and that the answer to that question varies throughout our lifetimes. But it remains really important. And when you look at, you know, the studies in people, again, over 60 who have a sense of purpose and who don't, it halves your mortality. Halves your mortality if you have a sense of purpose.
My gosh.
And there, a sense of purpose is health protective throughout the lifespan. So it doesn't have to be fancy. I think people get caught up in feeling like, okay, I need to save the world from hunger. And it doesn't, that can be your purpose, but it doesn't have to be. It can be, I'm the person who, you know, brings the food on Sunday morning to tea at the church and provides the opportunity for people to love and connect with one another. It can be simple, but as long as it's impactful in the world in a way that you're uniquely capable of doing, I think it's huge. And, you know, it is sad to me, having grown up in the southern Midwest in a very tight community, that so much of the United States is isolated and there isn't that community connection or that investment in each other and in our neighbors and trying to make a difference. And I think we need that as a country. I think we need it. I think part of the healing from the divisions we're experiencing is really about compassion and reaching out and trying to make a difference and not, you know, expecting our political leaders to do so, but making it happen on ourselves in our own places where we live.
Rachel Carlton Abrams, Dr. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Rachel Carlton Abrams is a family doctor in Santa Cruz, California. She's also certified in integrative and holistic medicine. She's the author of the new book, Body Wise, Discovering Your Body's Intelligence for a Lifelong Health and Healing. It's just out from Rodale Press. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.